Spy on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Europe watching two wars in Eurasia. What is to be done? I welcome Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. It is a easy to subscribe to website and newsletter from the Carnegie Endowment of International Peace. Judy's based in Berlin. And I go immediately to a new publication at Strategic Europe from Gwendolyn Sass, a non-resident senior fellow at the Carnegie and Europe, presenting the case that right now Europe must watch and pay attention to the United States' politics. The support for Ukraine is no longer uniform. The support for the war in the Middle East is running extremely hot, fog of war. The Biden administration is mixing these two together in requests to Congress for money. At the same time, there is obvious dissent across this country, especially on college campuses, about the intention of Mr. Biden to support Israel in its war against the attackers, the killers of 10/7. All of this adds up to the EU understands the Middle East, but the EU is threatened profoundly by Russia. Judy, a very good day to you. You are much closer to Moscow than I will ever be sitting here in New England. And it is good to consider Europe's stake in the conflict in Ukraine. The battlefield doesn't give me any confidence that it can be resolved this winter or even next spring. There are remarks by the defense minister in Moscow, Mr. Shoigu, speaking in Beijing, saying that Moscow is ready to negotiate, is ready to talk to Ukraine or NATO, at the same time repeating the allegation voiced by Mr. Putin in early days of the war that Russia is defending itself, that it was attacked by NATO. And that was the story then, and Mr. Shoigu repeats it now. Europe's commitment to Ukraine, Europe's commitment to NATO standing up to the aggression by Moscow, is it flagging the way it is in the U.S. Congress? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show. This is a very complicated question. The EU, as your listeners know, is 27 member states. They're all very different. They all have different commitments, and there are some freezers now in the EU, especially among Slovakia and Hungary, always Hungary over Russia's attack on Russia's war in Ukraine. But the EU is not up to it. Yes, politically they support Ukraine. Yes, financially support Ukraine. Militarily, it's uneven, but fundamentally, they have no strategic plan to deal with Ukraine if something happens next year, if a Republican administration is back in the White House. The Europeans, in some ways, are sleepwalking. They've had so much time to think during the Trump administration. They've had so much time to think the day after during the Biden administration, and they're not doing this.
And the way forward right now, you say there are many constituencies, many political advantages and disadvantages. I want to choose just one, Berlin, where you live right now. Chancellor Scholz has been adamant in supporting Ukraine and its resistance to Russia. But then again, he's adamant in supporting Israel and its quest to defeat the killers. Mr. Scholz remains adamant about foreign policy. Is it genuine? Is it sincere? Is he balanced? What is he balancing, being so adamant?
Well, you don't talk about a balance with German politics, because German politics just lacks all strategic depth. And German politics is in some ways about a reaction, not only driven by the public opinion, but also driven about the facts on the ground. However, when President Putin actually sided with Hamas after the appalling terrorist attacks and massacres in Israel, Scholz was unbelievably critical and called Putin and Russia cynical and all sorts of other criticisms about its stance in supporting Hamas. So I think in some ways Putin's stance towards Hamas in Israel has certainly galvanized Scholz's view of Russia. But it plays into Scholz's and Germany's view of Israel as well. This is such a complicated, emotionally driven, historically driven element of the German political outlook. And Chancellor Scholz keeps saying, yes, Israel has the right to defend itself. One does question why indeed Germany abstained at this extraordinary UN General Assembly meeting, non-binding meeting, which didn't even mention Hamas, and Germany abstained instead of opposing it. But there we are. It's all very complicated, because feeding into all of this is the huge anti-Semitism here in Germany and across Europe, and some Islamophobia as well. But certainly anti-Semitism is a new element sweeping across Europe, and I'm not exaggerating.
You asked that question of your colleagues in the newest publication. Judy asked, does the Hamas-Israel war make Europe vulnerable? And now we come to that shadowy foreign policy everywhere. For example, Stefan Babst, formerly of NATO, answers that Germany has 1 million Muslim residents, and they are disturbed to protesting or demonstrating about Mr. Schulz's stance. Is that destabilizing German politics?
First of all, it's more than 1 million Muslims. It's 1 million actually came here in 2015 alone, when Angela Merkel, the former chancellor, opened up at the borders out of compassionate and moral and ethical reasons. But there's an element here that they're just pro-Palestinian because of what's happening, because they see the siege of Palestine, of Gaza, and what's happening there. So these movements, while of course they are pro-Palestinian and supporting the Palestinians in what's happening, that they can't get the food or the aid in, but some of them are pro-Hamas as well. But what's happening is that they are creating their support for Palestine with their anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is being conflated with anti-Israel as well. And this is a terrible, dangerous element, what's happening here in Germany.
I have a helpful comment from Karma Kalamina, senior research fellow at the Barcelona Center for International Affairs, saying that the cracks are not only opening in German society and French society and British society, but they're opening between the West and the global South. What does that mean, Jody?
I wonder, is it opening? I mean, they were opening before with COVID, how the West looked after itself and came slow to the global South. But I think what Karma was getting at was the issue of colonialism, that in her perspective, Israel is colonizing the West Bank. It's not colonizing Gaza, by the way. It left Gaza. But there's an element here that the Global South sympathizes with Gaza because they see this as the Palestinian struggle against one of the last remnants of colonialism. Certainly a Spanish view, and the Spanish government view has been actually very critical of Israel. And actually, that view actually confirms all the splits inside the European Union on how to deal with this.
So the Global South is clearly on something that's been identified in Europe as dissenting from the Western point of view on Israel, not on Ukraine, on Israel. That's where it's come from. Is that correct?
No, they're dissenting on Ukraine as well.
Oh, I see.
In the sense that they haven't taken a clear stance on Ukraine or Russia's war and aggression, a unilateral, unprovoked aggression against Ukraine. And they're taking a stance on this latest war between Hamas and Israel. And frankly, this is about terrorism, especially from the Hamas, how they've treated their own people, but also what's happening in the rest of parts of Africa, terrorism, Sahel, the military coups, wherever you look. And you wonder what the Global South is really thinking. Of course, it's the thinking of the colonial era, but we've got to move on and look at the rights and wrongs of all of this instead of actually meeting out huge, dangerous anti-Semitism, which will actually come back to haunt us very, very soon.
John Kornblum responds to your question about is Europe vulnerable. He's a former U.S. ambassador to Germany, and he quotes the historian Walter Lacker, 2013, I slipped a century. Europe will not be buried by ashes, writes Mr. Lacker, like Pompeii or Herculaneum, but Europe is in decline. It's certainly horrifying to consider its helplessness in the face of the approaching storms. After being the center of the world politics for so long, the old continent now runs the risk of becoming a pawn. That was 10 years ago. Is that accurate today, Judy?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. And Europe's role and ambition to be a global player, we can forget it. We can forget it in the Middle East. This has no influence whatsoever. It's got no credibility. It has got very little influence in Eastern Europe. It cannot even get its back garden together, the Western Balkans, Kosovo or Albania, and the whole unending dispute between Serbia and Kosovo. Small fry compared to what's happening in the Middle East. But the European Union is not a player. It is too divided. It hasn't got a serious integrated foreign policy, and it hasn't got a strategic outlook. Main reason is that they do not think security. It is the United States that has provided the security to Europe, and Europe is not waking up to the fact that one day it may be alone without the United States security umbrella.
And that is the thinking of Peter Kellner, non-resident scholar at Carnegie Europe. He cites the politics of the U.S. right now, especially the Republican Party politics and the new Speaker of the House. We mentioned this before when we talked about Gwendolyn Sass's piece. He writes, of course, Europe is vulnerable to what happens in the Middle East and Ukraine and China and to our planet's climate and NATO if Donald Trump returns to the White House. However, our vulnerability comes from within, not just from afar. I think much of you, Judy, and I've learned to understand Europe, and you're hard on yourselves. I understand that happens when you're a critical thinker. Is Mr. Kellner's opinion widespread that the problem is in the House, not out there?
Problem is in the House. That's it. And the 27 member states have to decide what sort of house they want to live in. And at the moment, they're living in 27 different apartments inside the house or even on the outskirts. And they're not willing to take the intellectual strategic leap to have one proper house that we can all do things together and understand what is at stake.
Judy Dempsey is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, a Carnegie Endowment for International Peace publication. You're free to sign up and learn about these 27 individual thinking states and their leadership in two wars. And when we come back, more of the same. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Nash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.